like I was telling you there, I came into the bank one day, and this fellow asked me what I was going to do, and I told him that it being in February, I could do nothing but wait till fall to go back to school. Mm-hmm. And so he said, well, why don't you come in here and help me till fall? And it ended up that I'm still here. Mm-hmm. Because, as I said to you, when he found out what I could do in a business way, he wasn't about to let me go, see? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could run a typewriter. I was an excellent typist.
Uh-huh.
I knew accounting. I knew English. I had learned the preciseness of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
He started, I didn't know shorthand, of course, so he dictated to me on a machine like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you already had dictating?
No, we had the wax cylinder.
Oh.
Did you ever see one of those?
No, I hadn't. I must be in a museum now, you know, the type of machine like that.
I got them in the attic as souvenirs. The wax cylinder, and we would talk into that machine, and when the record was used there, we'd put it to a machine and shave it off and run it again.
Uh-huh. This is just like a simple tape recorder today.
Well, that's what it was, except it was done on wax.
Uh-huh.
And
You work in the bank here.
Yes,
right?
Here I came.
This is not, of course, where we now. That's not the original bank building.
No, that was torn down, and this is a new building.
This is a new building. When was this constructed?
1956.
1956. Uh-huh.
And the other one was constructed something like 1890.
1890.
Yeah,
I showed a picture of it in that book, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
History,
that's right.
But it's standing in the very same spot.
Yeah, very same spot. Uh-huh. Well, you know, I remember this, that one day he dictated to me a legal paper and asked me if I could, he talked it up on this machine. And so when I brought it to him, he says, well, did you do that? I said, well, I sure did. I said that just like the Navy would, you know. And he was kind of surprised that I could do that.
Did you were at the time already married? Were you married at that time?
I was not married, and I wasn't married until.
What did you live with your mother at the time here? Did your mother live in Milligan here?
Yeah, she lived here, and I lived with her then.
Uh-huh.
She lived here.
I see. How was the population-wise? Was Milligan about same size as it is?
It was about 100 bigger.
It's bigger. It
about
was bigger. Then.
We had our population was about 420. Now it's 320.
Uh-huh. What did you have of interest, you know, let's say in 1920s probably, that we talk about, would be your daily routine, you know, what would you do when you get up in the morning and come to work, you worked, and in the evening, you said that you had some, you played the trumpets at the time, and you had some activity. Was there a lot of people associated together at the time, after work, every day or on weekends? Or?
Well, we had in those days, that was before the good roads and before everyone had a car, we had a lot of card clubs around town.
Uh-huh.
We played cards together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, this was always a dancing town, so we'd have a...
Dancing?
They would always be dancing, of course.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But you're asking about the routine in the bank. I'll tell you what my routine was. I'd get up at 6 o'clock. I would come here and I would shake down the ashes out of the big potbelly stove that stood in here.
Uh-huh.
And I would start a fire and sweep the floors and dust the machines and go home for breakfast.
How many other people work in the bank?
There was three of us.
Of you?
The boss and a
accounting
lady and me.
Uh-huh. I see.
And when I...
Then you went for breakfast?
Then
you
I
say?
Went home, had breakfast and cleaned up.
What did you eat for breakfast? Eggs or coffee?
Yeah, eggs and coffee and bacon, stuff of that kind.
Uh-huh.
That was quite a common breakfast. Now I have for breakfast wheat germ pill, a vitamin C pill, and a glass of cranberry cocktail juice. My breakfast. All arthritis cures. That's what they are.
It's different.
Yeah.
Then you came back to the bank?
Then I came back perhaps by 8:30 or mm-hmm. and then the bank would open up and I'd mm-hmm. work here the rest mm-hmm. of the day.
Was this the only bank in town?
No, there was three of them. There was three banks in town. And before 1923, two of them had failed. And we
during the Depression?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two of them had failed. We had
but your bank, your bank stayed, that made it.
Yeah.
It seems to me that Czech must have been quite thrifty, you know, supporting three banks during time.
Well, of course, that was quite... Ohio had three banks. Tobias had two. Extra had three.
That was common then among all groups, you know.
There were too many banks, and the economy would not support them, and they finally failed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so you couldn't get away from that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was a... And we went through, I went through very trying times in the banking business because I went through the period of bad times. You know, my boss said, Joe, you came into the banking business in the wrong time. When I came into the business, if you would throw a turd up on the roof before it came down, it was gold. Now it's the reverse. You throw gold up there and before it gets down, it's turd. Because the economy was up, now the economy is down. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I came in 1919 and we ran from 1919 until 1933 when the Roosevelt finally closed all the banks because they were all in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. that was his way of telling me what the change was, and he came into business and what I did.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
Now, speaking about the First World War now, about 1917-18, considering there were many Czechs in Milligan, and you were probably at the time in your early 20s,
yeah.
Was there any interest among the Czech immigrants in the attempt of Masaryk and Beneš to establish independent state? Was there any interest, was it discussed, this question, insofar you remember, you know, around that time, in from 1914 to 1918 and maybe even later, was there any interest in that question of independent Czechoslovakia among Czechs in Milligan? Or was it just a matter of where people were not terribly interested in it, really?
There was a powerful interest in helping Czechoslovakia become independent. In fact, we had at that time, say along 1916 or 17, what they called a Národní združení.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a tremendous big event here. They raised, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000 to send to Czechoslovakia for the advancement. The University of Nebraska came here then with their cameras and they took a reel of events in 32 millimeter film, not 16.
Mm-hmm.
The wide 32 millimeter film. And they took movies of the event. They took movies of
mm-hmm.
the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that film was shown all around the country.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, it was the old celluloid film which deteriorates.
Uh-huh.
And it's not now in shape to show.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I tried to show it once in 19, when I first started, when it was so doggone brittle. You keep breaking.
It's a nitrate base valve.
Yeah,
isn't
it? Nitrate base.
Yeah, it can explode. It's dangerous too.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. very, very dangerous. And I mm-hmm. I ran part of it and I quit.
It's possible to duplicate it, but it's rather complicated.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and you see that film, if the film would get into your magazine and was on fire, it would just blow the place to hell. Because you see, the film would then be confined in that film magazine and it would explode.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah. Now, the present film I have is a fire.
Yeah, I know, it's a different base.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a base that won't burn. You can put the match to
it. That's right, that's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So there was interest. Were the names of Masaryk, for example, spelled out during those...
Masaryk all over the town. Uh-huh. Oh yeah, we had uh-huh. a very, very, very...
So there was definite interest at that time.
Mm-hmm. Now you can see when it was even to the extent when they got the University of Nebraska to come here with a team of movie taker, which was pretty darn uncommon in 1973.
Yeah, that was pretty early. My gosh, I hadn't seen any film, you know, sure. At that time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there was a very, and that was a big event in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that occasion which made some of these people go back to Europe, like the Svatoshai tour.
After the war?
Yeah.
Did they return to Czechoslovakia?
Yeah.
Completely?
No,
with the family?
Never came back, you know. Never came back.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's interesting, yeah. You know, that. Yeah. I should have, the attitudes of many Nebraskan Czechs I talked to, you know, were sort of mixed, you know, on this. Many of them, frankly, did not pay much attention to that event, you know, and the whole effort of Masaryk, you know, was not considered of any importance, you know.
Well, I think the reason we have here is fellows like Icha, Smrha, Plaček, Pavelka, Boše, Štěch, those people were all people that had a pretty good tie to Czechoslovakia, and they were going to help them become free,
uh-huh.
And were proud of it when it happened.
Uh-huh. This is of interest. We have in our university archives in Lincoln a collection of manuscripts which were given to us by Mr. John, J. John, like, mm-hmm. And they included two letters by Masaryk written in 1913 to Jan, who was a Czech immigrant who lived mostly in Cleveland. He was a Czech, what do you call, freethinker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in this letter, there's a statement made regarding Czechs in Iowa and Nebraska, mm-hmm. regarding support of for the Czech cause, you know, at that time. Mm-hmm. And Masaryk, you know, spells out that Czech freethinkers, you know,
yeah.
They are most active in supporting
yeah.
the Czech cause in the
yeah.
United States
yeah.
among, you know, among
yeah.
the Czech Americans, which is of interest. Now, did, for example, any people from Milligan ever go back on a visit to Czechoslovakia?
Oh, yeah.
Like with a Sokolsky sled?
Yes, sure. One of them was, well, there was a good many went, but one outstanding fellow would have been this J.V. Harlan.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an insurance agent here. He went back to Europe, and I told you before, he was the one that really saw Czechoslovakia as it was, because he walked from Svesnice to Vesnice and
mm-hmm.
talked to the
mm-hmm.
fellows along the way.
But that was after the war.
That was after the war.
Uh-huh. After the Second World War.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But these people that go there and see Prague and they don't know much about the
uh-huh.
actual life of the Czechoslovak people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is the I would say general impression of Czech who still pay some attention to events in the old country? Do they have any feeling about what's happened when the communists took over in 1948?
Oh, yeah.
Is that feeling quite strong, or do they have a degree of interest seeing that the country where their parents and what's happened again after, you know, first Austrian domination for 300 years, then 20 years of freedom,
yeah.
independence, then the war, Second World War, and then 3 years of more or less semi-independence and the communist takeover again. How do they feel about that in general, and how do you feel yourself about that, in your feeling about
that?
Well,
I think the people here feel that they're victims of circumstances, and they're very, very unhappy about it. They're very disappointed. Hello.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they're very, the people in this community are very strong for, and
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of activity here in favor of keeping the country free, and they're just as sad about it today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
now getting back to this movie, let me just
yes.
show you something. I'll bring something out here to show you.
Okay. Since you're coming back to Milligan after First World War and working in the bank ever since, you certainly developed many other interests, and one of them being, as I understand, is the your interest in movies. Could you tell us about that something?
Well, I became interested in amateur movies in 1937, and I thought up the idea that as an advertising stunt for the bank, I would take movies of the community, people living in the community and community events. So annually I would appropriate about $100 for film, which at those prices was a lot of film, and that I would annually show those to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a matter of, several years until I accumulated about 6 hours of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Of the people of the community.
How did you get interested in that hobby? How did you get to it? In 1937, that was other early stage in movie industry, and talkies just barely started, I believe, you know.
Yeah.
It was a silent movie. How did you by reading about it, or?
Well, really, I can't tell you that. I don't know how that got started. It's possible that perhaps I would relate it to this. I did have my daughter in 1937,
uh-huh.
And I started to take movies of her.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps it stemmed from that.
Uh-huh.
I have 10 400-foot reels of her from the time she was 4 days old.
Oh, my God.
And each one of those reels takes 30 minutes to run. So 10 times 30 is 300 minutes. That's the way it is. And from that, I think, came the idea that I could expand and take movies of the community and
mm-hmm.
and give the bank some valuable advertising. And
what kind of camera did you buy? I mean, what kind of camera did you use for shooting?
I first had a 16mm magazine camera, which the film is in a little magazine. All you do is slip it in the box and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I started with that. And, of course, that had quite limitations if I wanted to expand to some real stuff. So finally I bought this camera. Which is a Cine Special.
Uh-huh.
That
was in 19... when did you buy that one?
About let's see.
1940?
My name is on there, J.J. Klima, but they didn't put the date. But it seems to me that it was around 1940,
uh-huh.
41.
That's well preserved.
Now the University of Nebraska uses a camera like that today.
Uh-huh.
The pictures that they take of the football games are a camera just like that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And how much did it cost at the time?
This camera cost $750 at that time.
How much would it cost today?
Two or three times.
Can you use a colored film for it?
Oh, yes. I use nothing else but color.
No, but you couldn't then, of course.
No,
you know, there was no color film.
Oh, yes, there was.
1940?
Well, so soon after that.
Uh-huh.
I used a lot of color film.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. This is a magazine for it?
This is the magazine for the...
Uh-huh.
You put a 100-foot roll or a 50-foot
uh-huh,
roll in
uh-huh,
there.
Uh-huh.
And this is, you have two magazines, so you use up one film, you just slip the other one on.
Uh-huh. So you did a lot of filming, all
yeah.
kind of events in town.
Oh,
you said all kind of community events meetings of the various organizations.
Yeah, well, for example, this is reel number one. Check cashing scene, Milton Stassi, Mayor Smaha, Robert Dopnik. Scene two, Mayor Charles A. Cotes, Home in the Winter. Scene number three, construction of the water tower in 1939. Mayor Charles A. Cotes watches the job.
Uh-huh.
Number four, William Vavra and his combine crew. Five, Henry Rischlich and his flower garden.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, Vojta Beneš, Superintendent of the Republic of Czechoslovakia, visits Milligan. Dr. V.V. Smrha and Mr. and Mrs. Fred Kushy,
mm-hmm.
Mr. and Mrs. C. Smrha, Mary Smrha, and Grandma Smrha at a dinner
mm-hmm.
in honor of Vojta Beneš.
Uh-huh.
And that is in here in color.
Uh-huh. In color.
That
was during the Second World War, I presume.
Yeah, yeah,
uh-huh.
Right. Now, Joe C. Sunovich, auctioneer, crying the Slotic sale.
Uh-huh.
Number eight, ZCBJ convention at Milligan. Joseph, president of the convention, Omaha delegation, Senator Roman Hruška, director of the Supreme Lodge at Cedar Rapids,
Omaha delegation, Kansas delegation, and so on.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote to Senator Hruska when I was showing this film
uh-huh.
and said how youthful you looked. Then I had a nice letter from you.
He was a senator at the time already?
That was before he was a senator.
Uh-huh.
But he was then a director of the Bohemian Fraternal Association in Cedar Rapids.
Uh-huh.
And that's why he was here, see?
I see. Well, so
here's your film.
This is black and white, of course, this one here.
Huh? This is a 16-millimeter film.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Now, that film
they haven't even targeted them.
Those are titles to it, see?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you have how many hours for the...
About six hours. Yeah. Because I try to, when I show a public showing, I try to show 2 hours of it. That's plenty long.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I hope that you let me know when you're going to show next time something, and I'll be glad to come.
I will let you know. I'm now working on the next series of films, which I will show in October. I'll let you know.
Okay. Now, in addition to this, later on you became interested in organizing sort of first movie house in town. When was that, and what led you to do that?
Well, I just thought I could do some for the community by establishing this local community project. So I bought the equipment, which cost me about $5,000, put in motion graph equipment, sound movies, real high grade stuff in those days. And we ran those shows. The businessmen would contribute so much a week to the project as an advertising feature. And we would run a show on Saturday night and charge 15 cents.
What year was that? That was about 1941,
yeah.
41.
Yeah, because I was up in the movie booth the night they announced that Pearl Harbor was attacked.
Oh, is that so?
I was up there listening to the radio while I was getting the equipment ready. I ran that show.
You learned it from the radio, probably, about the technical
problem. Yeah,
it
was a radio, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran that show for 16 years.
Mm-hmm. Every Saturday evening?
If you went to the show Saturday night, we gave you a complimentary ticket for the next Wednesday.
That was run also on Wednesday. Saturday and Wednesday?
Yeah, it was a Saturday and Wednesday project.
Now, how did you order the movies? What kind of movies were you showing?
Those days, I had every picture that you could see anywhere because a film was available and it was ample and the companies were willing to sell it. Any show they saw in Lincoln, I showed here.
Uh-huh.
Except that I would perhaps show it 6 months after it was released in Lincoln because they would insist on having those shown at the expensive houses first.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, ours is a sort of a semi-free deal.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let us show the top hot movies free.
Uh-huh.
So that's the way
uh-huh.
that works.
But incidentally, you cannot go much to, since you started in 1941, was there any attempt made to show any Czech movie, during the war?
Oh, yes. Once a month.
Is that right?
A Czech film.
How did you get it? Did you get a hold of it?
There was a firm in Omaha that would supply me that film.
Uh-huh.
And I showed a Czech film once a month.
Uh-huh. Was it dubbed or was it spoken in Czech?
No, it was film made in Czechoslovakia. It was not dubbed.
It was subtitled? But the subtitles?
No,
English?
It was a movie. It was talkies.
It was talkies, I know, but sometimes there were subtitles in English, you know.
Well...
Maybe not.
No, because this was film that was made in Czechoslovakia. It was Czech actors.
Do you remember any title by chance?
Well, I don't
know. Babichka? Is there anything
well,
like that?
I wouldn't remember any title by name. No,
uh-huh.
But, we showed once a month. And we would have pretty fair crowds. For those movies, we would charge, I think, 50 cents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because there was no free, and there wasn't a free element in it. And we would get crowds of 150 to 200 to those Czech
mm-hmm.
shows.
Mm-hmm.
Today we wouldn't get that because those people were not here anymore, see?
No, that's true.
But you see, that many years ago in 1937, we had a lot of Czech people who just relished those Czech movies, you know.
Now, how did that those movies went on until when? I mean, how far Long did you carry on in that business?
We ran that for 16 years that way. Then when the TV tower came here about 19 miles away, people just kind of dropped off coming to those shows.
They bought televisions
And then I said, well, I've done my part, and I gave the community the equipment and everything. And there was another fellow took over, and he lasted about 2 years. But it was, the whole atmosphere was changing, you know. The movie industry wasn't making the film, it was hard to get. And you see, in those days, you had Warner Brothers, Paramount, Fox, Columbia. Each one of those companies made 50 or 60 films a year, 60 features. They were hounding me to sell me the film. Mm-hmm. See, today, you have to beg them for it.
How did you have that film, when you shot film, you had it protest? Do you have some shop here where they protest your film? When you shot a movie, you know, when you were yourself in that business of taking movies of various local events.
Yeah.
But who protest your film?
Well, there's the Eastman Kodak Company.
They processed it.
Mm-hmm. They processed the film and sent it back to you. Mm-hmm. And you'd get it in 150-foot reels, of course, and then you'd have to splice it.
Did you splice it yourself?
Yeah, I have a splicing machine. Splice it myself. Now, here's a reel, Weddings of Million.
Uh-huh.
This is an all-colored reel of Weddings of Million.
Uh-huh. You have a list of all of them?
Yeah. And let's see, there's on this list, there's 16 weddings, and there's two more on the, so I had 18 weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And when I showed this picture this last time, now you see that this film is in color.
That started when you started to shoot those?
The
wedding.
I shot the...
1937 already?
Well, approximately, yeah. And when I showed these pictures this last time, I had all of these people here. Now here's a splice that broke.
Splice broke, yeah. That dries up.
And so when I worked at it, you know, I had these people, as many as I could here, as guests. And I had them stand up during a break in the news and mm-hmm. announced that I wanted everyone to see how they looked when they were married.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a party.
Yeah, it is an interesting historical document in a way, you know,
yes,
that...
I have pictures of thrashing crews when they used the old steam engine and the hay
uh-huh.
racks and
uh-huh.
all the bundles and we're throwing them in the machine. I have stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I have some real historical evidence.
That's really interesting. Well, it was almost took quite a bit of your time, this hobby, you know.
I don't know how I did it all, but I somehow did, all right.
You still occasionally do some shooting today?
Well, yes. Now, when I'm going to show these pictures in the fall, I will take perhaps a couple hundred feet of organizations here. I will take the school board. I will take the township board.
Uh-huh.
I'll take the board of directors of the farmer's elevator. I'll take a picture of the town and country club. All the members in a group, and then I'll take the officer separately, the close-ups
mm-hmm.
of them. And that's a project I'm just starting on because I promised to show these films in October.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all the proceeds will go to the Milligan Community Club to spend
mm-hmm,
in
mm-hmm.
some way in connection with the centennial.
Uh-huh. Do you have any local historical society, Fillmore County Historical Society?
No, we have a Fillmore County which is very inactive, no good.
Uh-huh.
Saline County has a pretty good one.
Which one?
Saline County.
Saline County.
Yeah. And the Historical Society is located in Dorchester.
In Dorchester. Uh-huh.
South of Dorchester is the building, and
mm-hmm.
they have some schoolhouses. They're building up a project.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They've got a dandy going in Saline County, but
mm-hmm.
we haven't been able to get off the ground here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we covered pretty much the same. Now, So you live for the Xinjiang of the First World War, where you were in Sydney and during the war in Nova Scotia. And when you came back here, you lived all your life in Milligan here. Right. Did you do much traveling?
Yes, my wife and I have been all over the United States, I guess. We've never gone in a foreign country, except to Canada.
Except Canada,
But we used to take vacations of a month, for example, and hit some corner of the United States. Our last trip was down to Houston, Texas, where we saw a game in the Astrodome, and then we went cross country to Florida, up to Maryland and back home. That was our last trip. We've done, not extensive traveling, but some.
Would you like, I mean, just as a matter of interest, would you like, or did you ever think about seeing the place where you know, your Tchitcha, you know, where your folks were born, and
I would like to do that, except now I'm not at the age where I can take that anymore. But I would like to do that. If I had been financially.
Czechs voting pattern in Milligan or in the county, in Fillmore County or in the township here around. Who generally won election here? Now, if you remember, since you surely
you
know.
Mean, what party?
Yes, between the Democratic and Republican party. Is it pretty much split?
Heavily Democratic.
In all times, was it, let's say, going back to 1910 or so.
Well,
would say that Wilson was elected. In the First World War.
I'm sure that every president was the vote in this community went for every Democratic president,
including last couple of elections.
Yes, even that, except that.
You mean that they people here would vote for McGovern, for example, in the against Nixon.
Now I was going to say that in a case like that, that was not quite as. Marked. And we've had a lot more Republican votes than we used to have. We used to have very close to 100%.
Is that right?
Yeah, but today we have a lot of Republican votes. Perhaps 2/3 to 1/3 now. And of course, when it came to McGovern and Nixon, why he didn't get the Democratic vote here. I think he still won, but not a, but a narrow margin. Because we have a certain amount of Democrats that will vote for the Democrat. I don't care who it is.
That's the typical, you know.
Sometimes it's.
What about if you recall certain days of before the First World War, the issue of prohibition was not at stake, it was a local issue. Now, as a matter of curiosity, since it was a local option, what was the option here in Milligan or in the county? Was it what do you call it, dry or wet? You know.
Well, of course.
That was before prohibition was.
Well,
in 1920.
I'd say Milligan was generally quite wet. Czech town, beer drinking town. See, not liquor, but beer. And
there was a different vote on for beer
was,
and liquor.
No, there was not a different vote. But I mean that the Czech people. Are beer drinkers. They're not hard liquor.
That's right. That's right. Except Stivovica.
Except now, on the other hand, the Irish are whiskey drinkers. That's generally true.
Was there any brewery here in around Milligan or nearby?
Well, Wilbur had the brewery called Silithel. Silithel Strengthening was the name of the beer. Silithel.
There was a local beer then.
Oh yes, there was a beer tavern. There was a beer factory at Wilbur, and they manufactured beer called Silithel.
And that's what you got mostly here, or did you get other brands too?
We had all other brands. Yeah. Then Crete had a brewery, and I can't tell you what beer they manufactured, but Crete had a brewery for quite a while, long after Silithel. But it couldn't survive.
How did it taste? I mean, do you recall ever
no,
the taste of it?
No,
you didn't drink it at all?
No, well, don't see that silly bill. I think that silly bill factor must have gone out, well, pretty much in my boyhood days, and I wouldn't have much memory of that.
Well, what about in I believe it was in 1920 when the amendment came up and prohibition was established all over the country. What happened then? Was there any illicit brewing, during the Prohibition era?
Because you could go to the grocery store and buy Presidroy, which was...
Buy what?
Presidroy, which was a quart of the basic ingredient of beer, and then you take that home and put that in with a certain amount of yeast, and you brew your own beer. We had home brew everywhere here. I didn't like it very much, but...
I can imagine. That's too good. But some people did do that.
Many homes had their own brew.
Was it, strictly speaking, legal, this, or was it illegal?
No, it wouldn't have been illegal, because they sold that. If you made it at home and didn't sell it, there was nothing illegal about it.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, we had some salesmen out there, too. It was not illegal to make it at home and drink it at home.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start to peddle that, why, then you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder what other question was of any interesting event that you may recall throughout your life here in Milligan that would stand up, as of interest, perhaps. Is there anything? I don't want, to... anything that would stand up somehow in your memory, anything
at
all?
Well, we have one thing that, of course, well, I should say this, that in 1925, Milligan paved its streets, which was the first little town who paved its main street. That was 1925. We paved it with brick, and they were advertising that brick will outlast the bonds, which it has. You still see our brick pavement. That's mm-hmm. the pavement that went down there. And at the present time, we're paving the entire town. The entire town is paved. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to finish the west part of town about to be here tomorrow.
Do you think, is that cheaper, or is it better, do you think, than asphalt? Or?
Well, I don't know. There's a kind of a controversy which is better. Of course, in the east part of town, we have curb and gutter. And then the asphalt between, and I think that personally I just as soon see asphalt. Cement cracks in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
The extreme temperatures in Nebraska, cement.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go home on 41
mm-hmm.
from Milligan. You came that way, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. I came from, I came from north, from Highway 80 this time. I'm going back to Wilbur now,
Well, now, when you go back on 41, that was only a year ago, it was put in there. Just notice how that cement is cracked up.
Oh, yeah, well, it's two extreme temperatures. It's true. That
I should say we have a famous thing in town here. We had a famous bootlegger in those prohibition days, to the extent that he built, 1 mile south of town on a farm, pretty fancy distillery.
Distillery, yeah. I mean, that's for
this was not beer, this was whiskey, this was alcohol.
For spirits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he spent a fortune on it, and he had some underground escape routes, and but they finally caught him. And I talked to an old friend of his not long ago who said to this fellow, Jim, you've made a lot of money, let it alone, quit. We'll clean you out. They finally caught him, and a fellow left here broke his flat because they took all his money, and the government finally caught him,
You mentioned to me while we talked a while ago that you were just about the only remaining old-timer. I mean, when did the other people, died? I mean, was it quite a while ago?
They just keep dropping off year after year, of course. Two years ago, some fellow, 84, 85, passes away, and then another year, another fellow, those old-timers, till today, those fellows are all gone.
How old was your mother? You said you
she
mentioned
was,
that...
She was 90.
She was 90.
She lacked a little of 90. Yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. She kept excellent health until mm-hmm. one day she got sick and mm-hmm. lived about a couple months after that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we covered all that we wanted to cover. I think I didn't miss anything that would be of interest. So I would like to thank you very much for your cooperation and help in our project. And I hope that I'll tape some other people here in Milligan.
Well, if you were interested in taping this Fred Kushik, I would...
Okay.
I